says the common poruch, says Rashi, we've already explained a little bit further, but he says, in other words, from the statement that we had just before, that everyone who wants to see her, you take a look at the third line on this page, right? That whoever wants to see her can come in and see, you know, what's happening over there. So he says, from this, we get the impression then that it means that men and women, anoshim and anoshim, okay, can come, okay? Or va'afilo anoshim, even men can watch what's going on. But, as we'll see from the Mishnah, actually what the Mishnah wants to state is that this should be an object lesson for whom? Not for men, but for the women. Because we have a pasuk. And what is the pasuk? V'nivasru kol anoshim, mikro b'yecheskel. It says simply it's a pasuk in Yecheskel. But as I told you, it means that, you know, women should take musar, so to speak. In other words, they should see the lesson that the, what's going on over there, right? And they should not fall into lewdness, even as you have sinned in, by being lewd. All right. So now we continue with the Gemara. Gemara at this point is not too difficult, I hope. All right. It says first of all, no hanimili. How do we know these things? But of course, the question is, what are we talking about? So Rashi explains. Take a look at the Rashi, Menohani Billy. He says, Deba'aya, that we require Besdin HaGodol. That we require, you know, that the Sanhedrin should actually be involved in this, right? Nehi, Debi Yerushalayim, Bidin Hashkeisa. We know that she must be given, you know, this Mayim HaGorim, in other words, given this ordeal in Yerushalayim. Kidich Siv, even as the Pasuk says, V'he'emid ha-Kohen es ha-Yishol s'nei ad-Hashem, that the Kohen is to cause this woman to stand before the Lord. Actually, what does it mean, before the Lord? It means, in other words, in the Beis HaMikdash, right? Avol Bezdin HaGodol, but that we require the high, you know, the high Sanhedrin, the high Neshiva Mi'echad, in other words, 71 judges, Menalon, where do we have any reference to that? The loan is kashu bo echod mishnei botei butin. I mean, why shan't we say, you know, that any of the other kinds of bestins, you know, would be fit to do it? Shehoyu sham shel esu mishlosha, as for example they had in Yerushalayim, two courts consisting of how many? Of 23 judges each, right? Remember last week I spoke about the court of 23 and so on. So why shouldn't she appear before Echo Mishnei Bote Dinin, you know, one of the Bezdins Yerushalayim, Shalesu Mishlosha, Echo Yoshev Al Pesach Harabayas? There is one that had its normal sessions by the entrance to the Harabayas, the Echad Yoshev Al Pesach Hazor, and another one which was by the entrance to the actual Azora itself, Kedonos Hasedon, as Gemara says. So why, in other words, how do we know that we need the Besdin HaGodol? So Amar Rab Chiya Bar Gamda, Gemara, right? Amar Rab Yossi Bar Chanina, he quotes it in the name of Rab Yossi Bar Chanina. He says, Asya Torah Torah. When you see Asya Torah Torah, you know that this means that this is a Bezeira Shava. Zereshava means that they have a similarity of words, but as I said, it has to be based upon a tradition. You have to have a tradition for this. But where the tradition holds, then the similarity of words means that what is true for A is also true for B. All right. So what is Torah Torah? So it says, Ksiv Hocho, here in reference to the Soto, it's written, V'yoso Laha Kohen is Kol HaTorah, right? That the Kohen is to do unto her, in other words, he's to follow all the teaching, you know, all the Torah that that teaches, you know, what is the procedure, right? Uchsiv hasam. And in the case, in another case, what is the other case? The other case is the case that we speak about, a Zokein Mamre. Who is a Zokein Mamre? This is a man who, after the Sanhedrin, the Besdin HaGodol, has given a decision, so he says, I refuse to abide by it. And he goes out and tells people in public that they should not follow the ruling of the Besdin and so on. So he is a Mamre. In other words, he is rebellious, acting rebellion against the edict of the Besan Agoro, and we want to avoid that, you know, there should be 25 different authorities each disputing, so that we don't know actually, you know, what the din should be. So therefore, it's written al pi haTorah sheyerucha, right? According to the Torah which they will teach unto you, meaning the decision that is made by the Beis Din, this is the din Torah that you have to follow, okay? And the person who disobeys it, then what is it? Then mala halam b'shiv mi'echot. So just as in the case of the Zokin Mamre, he has to be tried by a court of 71, and also he's not only tried by a court of 71, but he's actually defying the edict of the court of 71, you understand? In other words, he's not defying, let's say, an edict of a lower court, but of the Supreme Court he's defying, right? So afkan b'shiv mi'echot. So likewise over here, in the case of the Sota, she has to be tried by the court of 71 judges. Okay? Yeah. B'shiv mi'echot, says Rashi, Nifsiv, as it's written, min hamokom hahu. You see that in the Rashi? Min hamokom hahu. Right, from that place, meaning from the Beis HaMikdash. What is Hamokom Ahu? It's Mokom Miyuchot. It's a very special place where the Sanhedrin meets. Dehainu, in other words, Lishkas Hagozis, the chamber of hewn stones. Sheafilu Mitzon Abe Page, the Himra Lehen, and this goes back to the law of the Zokin Mamre. It says, let's say that the Beis Din HaGadol was in Beis Page. This is what you have in Long Island, you have Beth Page, but it's really Beth Page, okay, which means the house of figs, or the house of unripe figs, okay? So let's say that he would find the Beis Din HaGadol over there in Beth Page, not within Yerushalayim itself, but on the outskirts of Yerushalayim, right? And the Himra Lehen, and he defied their their decision over there. So Yaltid and the Nave, well, this we learn from the fact that it has to be min ha-mokem ahu. In other words, that it's only when they're sitting itself in the Lishkas HaGozer. So we learn that in Hamro Samro, in other words, that has no effect. In fact, he wants to disagree with them, so he'll disagree with them, you understand? But it's when is he judged as a Zokin Mamre? Only if this is in the Lishkas HaGozer, and he himself is there in the Lishkas HaGozer with them, and he defies them openly to the face. He says he refuses to abide by their decision, etc., etc., etc. Okay? All right. All right. Now the Gemara says, Umayim Noleha, right? In other words, they say, in the Gemara now, Umayinin Oleha. In other words, they say, words to cast fear, as I explained to you last week, upon her, right? Uraminhu. So now the Gemara asks the following kasha. It says, Kedera Shemayim in Oleha. We have a statement in Tosefot which says as follows. It says, just as they, so to speak, threaten her not to drink, right? So do they threaten her to drink. So naturally, it sounds contradictory, right? So how do we get around the contradiction? So the answer is, Omrim lo, they say to her, Biti, my daughter, Imborur loch hadovor shetahora at, if it is clear to you, in other words, you're absolutely certain that you are innocent, Imdi alburyeh, then stand, take a stand, the fact that you're innocent. Bushasi, and drink the mayim. Why? The fishain hamayim hamorim domim elalasam yovesh shemunach obosachai. Says because the Mayim HaMa'orim can be compared to a Sam Yovesh. Sam Yovesh would mean like a dry medicinal powder, so to speak, which is placed upon raw flesh, right? So Im Yesha Mako, if there's Taka, a wound underneath, then what's going to happen? Then the Chalko V'Yorit. Then the medicine is going to penetrate through the skin and into it, and of course it's going cause damage. But ain shamaka, but if there is no bruise over there, Einam oil kum, then the powder, you know, this medicinal powder is not going to have any effect whatever. Right? So in other words, he's comparing it what? To the Maimamorim. In other words, if you are innocent, then you know that the water is not going to have any effect whatever upon you. But if you are guilty, then it will have, right? And then he says, then the Gemara says, Lekasha. It says, really, there is no contradiction in the statement that we said that they threaten her drink and they threaten her don't drink, right? It says, Lo kasha, he says, not a kasha. Why? Because kan kodem shenimcha kamegila. If it is prior to the fact when they, you know, erase God's name and the scroll that the Kohen reads to her, then in that case, what kind of iyum are they giving to her? What kind of warning are they giving to her? The answer is they're warning her, you know, that she shouldn't drink, right? Confess and don't drink. But once the scroll has already been erased with God's name on it, then in that case, what are they going to say to her? By all means, drink, because remember, the procedure is that they write the Megillah, right? They have to write it on a piece of parchment. And then after that, you know, they write it like they would, you know, a Sefer Torah. It's the same idea. And then the Kohen takes the Mayim HaMa'orim, and what does he do? He erases everything that's written in the Megillah, and then he gives it to her to drink. Okay? Of course, also, they have to put in Mekarka Mishkan. In other words, they have to also add to it dust from the dust of the sanctuary. And also, they put in something, according to the Rambam, that they put in like gall or wormwood or something, you know, in order to give it a bitter taste, okay? But now they'll tell her, drink it. I mean, if you're innocent, by all means, drink it. So this is the reason why it's not a contradiction. It depends at what point in the service we're talking about. Then it's written, you know, that he has to tell her different things so that she should feel, she should not be ashamed to confess if she's done wrong, right? Tana Rabbana. Sages taught us, Eber lefaneha devorim shel hagodah ma'asim shiru b'ksuvim harishayim. They tell her different things that have happened either in various stories about great people or things that happened in the early writings. In other words, you know, like in the Torah and so on. Kigon, as for example, we have a pasuk in Job, Sefer Iyov, which says, Hashem hachomim yagidu v'lo chichadu me'avosa. It says, these are things that wise men say, and they do not conceal it from their parents. In other words, actually, they're going to take it in the sense that even the parents, if they've committed wrong, but they're not ashamed to confess that they're wrong. This is the basic idea, that chachomim, if they do wrong, are not ashamed to confess that they are wrong. Okay? Yehuda, for example, hodo v'lo bosh. Yehuda confessed that he was wrong, and he was not ashamed. Of course, in what case was that? If you remember, this was the case where he met a prostitute, as he thought, right? And it was Tamar, of course. Only she, you know, she was wrapped around with a veil. He didn't recognize who she was, right? And then after 3 months had passed, it was obvious that she was in a family way, right? And so he said she should be burnt alive. Okay, this was, should be a punishment. And as she was being taken out, so she didn't say, you know, Yehuda, you're the one who is the father of my baby, right? But instead, you know, she says, the man, you know, with whom I had relations, he left me these things. And she pointed out the security that he had given her, that he would pay her afterwards, right? So at that point, he says, you know, Sotko Mimeni. Actually, she is more righteous, he says, than I am. Because I should have given her to my son, Shelah, and I didn't do it. Remember that the first two sons died because they didn't behave themselves with her and so on. And so he admitted, you know, that she was more righteous than he. Okay. Huh? Yeah, yeah, Er, Onan, right. Yeah, correct. Er was the first husband, Onan was the second husband.
They were upset because they were trying to bring up their brother's children.
Well, that was Onan, right. Er himself...
His name would be involved.
Yeah.
His name
was... Er was a different story. Er did not want... Well, I mean, Onan went after his ways too, in other words. For whatever reason is, he didn't want him to become pregnant. And so as a result, you know, he practiced masturbation. And he did not enable her to become pregnant, okay? And then Onan did the same thing. So both of them died. And the next one in line was Shelah. And, so Yehuda, you know, stalled marrying her off, because he said, you know, if she marries Shelah, so he'll die too, as a result, you know. So at any rate, here, she says, Yehuda said, Sotkom imeni. She is actually more righteous than I am. In other words, he confessed that he was the one who was guilty over here. Okay? And, Mehayotsofo, what was the end? In other words, what was the result? The result is Nochal Chayuhim Haba. He inherited the life of the world to come. Another case, Reuven Hod of Lobosh. Reuven also confessed and he was not ashamed. And of course, what was the sin of Reuven?
Who inherited Olam Haba? Yehuda,
right. By virtue of the fact that what? That he had confessed the sin. You understand? Okay, so, right. And Reuven too. Reuven too repented. What is the story about Reuven? If you remember, there's a story that after the death of Rachel, so Yehuda, Reuven says, right, you know, says over there actually that, you know, he actually entered, you know, his father's bed, you know, with Bilhah. But right, there are different interpretations. Either he actually did something, or the more traditional explanation is right, moved the bed into Leah, and so. But at any rate, he did something that was wrong. Okay, so again, according to the Gemara, he confessed it. Although we don't find it in the Torah that he confessed, but nevertheless, the Chachamim say that he did confess, as we'll see in a moment. So Reuven Hod of Lobosh.
Rashi and Rambam differ on interpretations.
Yeah, of course. You're always going to find the difference of interpretation, okay? So Reuven also confessed the sin, and he was not ashamed to confess the sin, and Mahayosofa, so as a result, what happened to him? Nochal Chayon Mahaba, right? Masacharon. So, and the Gemara now says, and what was their reward? So it says, what do you mean Masacharon? What do you mean, what was their reward? Kidakam Rin, and you already said, I mean, that this is that they get Chayon Mahaba, right? This is what we're talking about. What was their reward in this world? So they quote another pasuk from the same section of Iyov, which it says, "Lahem levadam nitna haaretz." To them alone has the earth been given. Lo avar zor b'soicham, and no stranger has passed in their midst. So it says, "Bishlamo b'Yehuda." In the case of Yehuda, Ashrecham, we find actually in the Torah, right, the Oda, that he confessed the chsiv vayaker Yehuda, right, that Yehuda recognized now, you know, that he was the one who was guilty, right, vayomer, and he said sot kumimeni, right, ele Reuven min halon de oda. Where do we know that Reuven also confessed the sin? So he says the omar Rabbi Shmuel b'achdain, as Rabbi Shmuel b'achdain, he said omar Rabbi Yochanan, im Rabbi Yochanan, he says my chsiv, why does it say, and this is taken from the bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to the children of Israel before he died. Remember, it's the last chapter in the Torah, right? It says over there, Yechi Reuven v'yal yomos, right? Let Reuven live and not die, right? And then it says, V'zos liYehuda. The next pasuk says, and this is for Yehuda, okay? So, in other words, there is a close tie-in between Reuven and Yehuda, right? And the Gemara continues by saying, "Kol osan shonim sho Yisrael b'midbar," all those years that the people of Israel were in the wilderness, you know, traveling from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael, So the bones of Yehuda were rattling around in his coffin. There is a tradition. If you remember, you know, Yaakov, of course, specifically asked his sons to do what? Take him out, right? Take him and bury him in the Moses Machpelah.
Right.
Yosef, before he died, also told his brothers that, you know, right? Take them out, right? Take my bones out with me. Okay, from here.
He couldn't be taken out till Yosef.
He
could be taken out till the Exodus.
That is correct. Right. But there's a tradition that not only Yosef's bones, you know, were escorted in the coffin back to Eretz Yisrael, but also those of his brothers as well. So if his brothers were, you know, going back to Eretz Yisrael, the question is, you know, about Yehuda, that his bones were rattling around in the coffin, right?
Where did they bury them?
Well, we know Yosef was buried in Shechem. It's written, yes, in the book of Joshua. Where the others were? Presumably Yehuda was buried someplace around Hebron, probably. Because after all, Hebron, you know, is, you know, this was the city where Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were buried, or the Mechava buried over there, and then there are various graves in the general vicinity. Yeah, the Moses Machpelah, right. Well, he wasn't buried in the Moses Machpelah, but he was buried probably in the general area.
So
over
none
there.
Of the brothers were buried?
Presumably, the various brothers were buried in territory that was assigned to their Shevet.
I see.
Because just as, you know, Yosef is buried in Shechem, why was he buried in Shechem? Because this was given to Ephraim.
So Yaakov was the last one going to Machpelah.
Yeah.
Yaakov and Esau were the last one going to Machpelah.
Well, Esau wasn't buried over there. Well, that's already a different story.
Yeah.
It doesn't say so in the Torah, okay. Torah says only about. Okay. Yeah. All right. So they were rattling around at Sha'omad Moshe until Moshe arose, Bikei Shalom Rachbim, and he begged the Rebbeinu Shalom to have Rachmanis on Yehuda. Omar Lefonov, he said to him, Rebbeinu Shalom, he says, Migaram Ruvein Shehoido, you know why? It's a special zchus that Yehuda has. His zchus, his merit, is the fact that who caused Reuven that he should also confess, right? The answer was, it was the example of Yehuda. So what happened then? At that moment, all Evorei Leshofa. So the bones that had been disjointed came back again into their regular sockets where they belonged, okay? All over here is not Al. All is the Aramaic word, which means entered, okay? Or came back. Right, was Yehuda. So therefore, Therefore, this now, you know, is the merit of Yehuda, right? And miyad, immediately we find Shema Hashem called Yehuda, right? So all Evarei Leshofas, we said, right, that Moshe Rabbeinu prayed, hear, O Lord, the prayer, literally the voice of Yehuda. So the bone went back to its proper place. Then below Habakkuk Island lay the Masipta Rekia. However, after Yehuda, you know, was brought to burial, nevertheless they did not want to accept him in the yeshiva up in heaven, Masipta Rekia, the yeshiva in heaven. So Moshe Rabbeinu again prayed. What did he say? He says, V'yelam ot v'yeno, literally bring him to his people. In other words, let him appear before the heavenly tribunal, right? So there was Yehuda, but v'lo hava ko yada mishko l'mitrach mishmata v'hadei rabbonim. He sat over there, but he didn't know what all the discussion was going on, you know, while the rabbis, the sages up in heaven were busy discussing, you know, halacha. He didn't understand what was going on over there. So then, again, Moshe Rabbeinu prayed on his behalf. He said, Yodov Rav Lo. In other words, may his hands perform valorously for him. So lo hava kosal kolish mata aliba de hilchasa. He didn't understand, you know, what the fine points of the halacha that they were discussing, you know, what it was all about. So again he prayed and says, Ve'ezim it's a rough to yeah, right? So finally enable him, says Moshe Rabbeinu, that he should have no more tzoras, or he should have no more you know, enemies. In other words, please admit him, you know, to give him the ability to be up in heaven and to have alichta gedoy l'mhava. Okay? So Gemara continues, says Bishlamo Yehuda Oeda, right? This is in accordance with the opinion that says Yehuda confessed not because he wanted to say that you know, she was more righteous than me, but Heichad Yelosu Sorek Tamar, right? So that Tamar should not, you know, be put to death through burning. Elo Ruvain, but tell me, Ruvain, Lomalei de Ude, why should he confess? For Omar Rav Sheshes, didn't Rav Sheshes say, Chotzef alai hamafit chatoi, I don't like somebody who confesses things openly. Confession should be private and not open. So, Kehechid elo lechshedu achoyi. So the answer that he gives over here, why did Reuven confess openly? The answer is so that his brothers should not suspect, you know, that he was guilty of anything. So that's why he confessed that he was wrong, and so on. Or, actually, as Rashi says, he confessed so that the brothers should not be suspected, that is, the other brothers should not be suspected by their father. By coming out openly and saying, Father, I was the one who was guilty, so that would absolve the other brothers from being under suspicion by their father. Okay?
Didn't he have a hand in putting Joseph in the pit?
Reuven, was it Shimon? Okay. Reuven saved Joseph from being put to death. Okay? Do you remember? You know, the brothers, they threw him. It doesn't say who, but obviously it was probably Shimon and Levi who threw him into the pit. Okay, I mean, because
it was Shimon for sure.
Yeah, okay. So, at any rate, Reuven saw it and he said, you know, lo nakeinu nefesh, let's not kill him, and so on and so forth, okay? And he came and tried to save him, right? And afterwards he says, you know, Hayelad einenu, and they saw that he was missing, because actually it was Yehuda who suggested that they do what? That they sell Yosef to the Yishmaelim and not kill him, okay? So, at any rate, Yehuda came back and he saw, you know, that Yosef was not there, and he says, well, how am I going to tell my father, and you know, what's going on? So he did try to save Yosef, okay?
All right.
Yehuda actually carried out the deed of taking him out of the pit and selling him. Reuven wanted to save Yosef, but he was not able to do it. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. Alright. So at any rate, yeah. So shall I go over the right? I'll say it's 9 o'clock. Alright, why don't we save?
Where are we?
Okay. We are now three lines from the bottom. On Zion Omid Beis.
Okay.
So next week, Amir Tzashem will review the Rashi, and then we'll go on through Daf Ches, and we're moving.
All right.
Welcome to you.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe I'll start from about the middle of the Rashi then, okay. Since I said that we would go over it. Okay. Beginning with Lehem Levadam Nitna Horetz, right? To them alone the land has been given. So Rashi interprets this, that Yehuda Zocha L'Malchus, that this shows that Yehuda was the one who merited to kingship in Israel, because, you know, King David was of Shevet Yehuda, okay?
Right.
And this is, it says, but they suffered the brachas. He says, where it's written, Reuven not al chelik techilo ba'oretz be'ir ha'yarden. In other words, if you remember, Yehuda became king, but some reward had to be given to Reuven also, because he did try to save Yosef, and also because of Yehuda's confession. So Reuven also decided to confess, So his reward was that when they settled, you know, in Eber HaYarden on the other side of the Jordan River, if you remember, that's where they went first. So Reuven was the first one to get a chelik in Eretz Yisrael. Because if you remember, it says over there that it was given to, you know, this is one of the tribes, Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. Those are the ones who had it.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. But lo yavar zor b'seicha, he says, Dorash Rabbi Tanchuma. This is a drash for Rabbi Tanchuma. They must lo yavar zor b'seicha, k'shebo meishol v'orcha. He says that no stranger ever got in, mixed in with them. When did this happen? This is when Moshe came in order to give his blessing. And what was the blessing that we find, you know, in Parsha v'seicha brocha? It's written, Yechiv Reuven, right? In other words, let Reuven live. And then it says, "V'zois to Yehuda," and likewise to Yehuda. All right. So, "Ein lecho bebirkas kol hashvotim moscheles v'zois chutz mizu." It says that among the various blessings, if we take a look in the Chumash and see in the V'zois Habracha, the only tribe that it's written, you know, with beginning with the word V'zois, so this is, you know, Yehuda, V'zois to Yehuda. So naturally, as we said, I mean, the reason being that, you know, Yehuda and Reuven were singled out in order that they should receive a particular blessing for having tried to save Yosef, that's one. But the other one, of course, being that both of them were, shall we say, man enough in order to confess their sins.
How do they tie Yehuda in with it? Because that's the beginning of the Pasha.
Yeah, well, that's right. First is Yehuvim al Yavos, Vimisom Mispar. Then after that, it's written Mizos to Yehuda by Yomar, Shmar Hashem called Yehudog, etc., etc.
Because
okay.
He's the first one in the Parshas Mizos Habracha, he's
yeah, well, the two of them, right. Okay. And they're put together, yes. Okay? All right. Then, yeah. When we said, that's best of Shal Yehuda, Biskal Gadibar. Remember, we had that in the Gemara, it said over here that. All the years that the people of Israel were wandering in the wilderness, so first of all, we said that there is a tradition that each of the ancestors of the Shvatim were taken out of Egypt, just as Joseph wanted not to let his body remain in Egypt after his death, so that when the people of Israel would be freed from Egypt, so, you know, he made his brother swear that, you know, that they would take him out, take out, you know, literally, you know, bring up my bones from here. So the others also, each of the individual fathers of the various Shvatim, they also, they had their bones carried from Egypt in their Orem. Okay? Mm-hmm. So.
During the Exodus?
Huh?
During the Exodus?
Yeah, right, exactly. But what was happening with Yehuda? So we said that his atzmosov, his bones were misgalgalin, they were rattling around over there in the Oren. So it says atzmos kol ha-shvatim, and Rashi brings over here that the bones of every one of the fathers of the Shvatim, he'alumim b'tzraim, they brought him up from Egypt. The hu shema Yosef, and this is what Yosef said, v'halisim es atzmosai mizeh itchem. The key word over here is yitchem. In other words, you are to carry out my bones from here with together them. With you. So with what you. Is together with you? He charged his brothers that when you go out, make sure that you take me out, you see. Right. So this is the source of the idea. Okay? Yeah.
Why did he expect yitchem, to die? He expected to die before his brothers?
He did.
He did?
He did. Yeah, he was the first of the brothers to die.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it says itchem, so they take in the sense of im atzmoseichem, together with your bones, take me out, right? The hoyo atzomos kol hashvotim, right? Shlodon kayemes. It says that the bones of all the tribes, again, you know, the fathers of the various tribes. So it says shlodon, which means like their skeleton. Okay, the skeleton remained. Okay, the Yehuda. And as far as Yehuda was concerned, so he says, Evor, Miss Parkin, Miss Galgalin. They were breaking up and rattling around. Barono, in his coffin, right. Yipnei Shanidas Atzmo, Be'avon shel Binyamin, because he literally he swore to Jacob that he himself would be menudeh. In other words, menudeh is somebody who is put into disgrace, or let's see, what's the practical cherem like? Right, exactly. Okay.
Well, so, he wasn't in bond like his father.
Huh?
He wasn't in bond.
Right. Okay.
So Yaakov was the only one.
Yeah. Right. Well, Yaakov was, but also Yosef was. But we don't have a record that any of the others were involved. Okay?
They were taken out.
Yeah, because
on.
With Yosef it's written by Echadu, by Yachnatu or so, it says over there that they embalmed him, by Yusim Barubim Mitzrayim, and he was put into a coffin in Egypt. Okay? So, yeah. All right. So he took this oath, you know, that he would be punished, you know, when? This is when he made a pledge to his father that he would bring back Binyamin. Remember, he said to his father,
right.
I will be a sinner unto you all the days, which would mean, you know, all the days not only of my life, but as Rashi interprets over here, even in the world to come. Right. So this is where we have a source for the fact that this Gemara in Brochus that says Nidui Shel Chochem Afilo Al Tanai Hubo. But as you notice, there's a different reading that we have over there on the side. First of all, what is the reading over here? Rashi interprets it in the sense of Nidui Shel Chochem, that if a chacham, in other words, a scholar, places somebody into nidui, you know, into cherem, then in that case, even if it's al tanai, even if it's only like on a temporary or on condition, instead of, you know, for always, but nevertheless, who bought? It's going to happen. So the reading that we actually have on the side over there, it says, Tarichlios, you see on the parenthesis on the left over there, it says, Nidui al Tanai Tzorech Hapora. Actually, the text over there says that if, you know, the Chochem pronounces a like a temporary ban on you, or on condition, you know, that if you don't fulfill this, then you're going to be Menuda, right? Then in that particular case, he says, the only way you can get out of it is that a Chochem has to be Matir. In other words, he has to decide himself that you are free from having to observe the needle. Otherwise, it's going to take effect.
Oh, yeah. Chacham has to come along and give him a reprieve.
Right, right. Of course, I mean, to a certain extent, you know, when we have Hatoras Nedorim, all right, there it's a neder, you know, you take a vow and then you don't fulfill it. But it's somewhat similar. But as a matter of fact, if you take a look at the dusach of what we say in Hatoras Nedorim, so we say, you know, all nidui, every nidui, and shamto, and this and this, okay? So, you know, the same thing happens, you see, you know, that you have to have a chacham who will be matir, you know, the whether it is the neder that you take, or whether it is, you know, that a ban is pronounced upon you, the ban takes effect, unless a chacham is, you know, he cancels it out, so to speak, okay? All right. Now, as we said before, when we studied the text last week, we know Yehuda, it's written specifically in the Torah that he confessed, right? Why? Because, you know, when he saw Tamar being taken out, you know, but as a matter of fact, he was the one who said, you know, she should be burned.
Burned, yeah.
Right.
For
as a punishment, you know, for having sinned, you know, having committed adultery, and she's pregnant now. So, you know, she said to him, you know, that a certain man who gave me these things and so on and so forth. So he recognized it and he said,
Sod called
me many. She was more righteous than I. Right. She was right and I'm wrong and so on. So he confessed. After all, he said it not just to her, but he also said it in the presence of the people who were there.
Right.
So,
you know,
pardon me?
She had the physical proof.
She had the staff.
Well, she had his staff.
His signet.
Right, if you remember, right.
His garter.
Yes, string that he had, right?
That's physical.
Yeah, okay. So she had proof, you know, that he was the one who had given it to her. Because, remember, you know, he said, I want to send you payment, but I don't have the goat right now to send to you as payment. So she said, and he said to her, so tell me, what kind of a pledge shall I give you that I'll be back and I'll pay you? So, okay, so chosam is the seal. Silecha is a special kind of a string,
yeah,
a dartle
like
or something
yeah.
that he had. And the mater, the staff that he had. So he left these with her as a pledge.
He recognized them. So.
Right, right. All right, so, as I said, with Yehuda, we have it openly in the Torah, you know, that he confessed that he was wrong. Okay.
Right.
But, Migoram the Reuven Sheyoda, the Maasei Tzuya Aviv, who brought it about that Reuven also should confess when it came to doing this business, you know, with Bill his bed and so on. Whichever way you interpret, you know, what he actually did over there. So he says, Yehuda. It was Yehuda. Shehoda b'maase Tamar. Okay, he was the one who confessed concerning what he had done with Tamar.
Her punishment was supposed to be spurning.
Yes,
but,
yes.
There could be different interpretations on that word. I mean, according to some commentators, some think it might mean just... kind of a different type of punishment other than physical burning. I mean,
I think I understand what you mean. I mean, that there are other possibilities that what strength is. But if we take it literally, this is it. Now, I don't say it's necessarily burning at the stake, because in Gemara and Sanhedrin, you know, where they speak about the four Mrs. Bezdin, the four methods of execution, right? Skila, Srefa, Herik, Vechenek over there. So Srefa actually represents that they take, you know, like hot molten lead, which they pour down the throat. And, you know, that's the way that they die. Okay? So that's Srefa.
Is that what it says in the...
The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, it doesn't say that...
It's a punishment for her, it mentions Srefa.
It's a horrible punishment, no question about it. None of the punishments are nice. But the Gemara, you know, wants to know which is considered the more severe, which is considered the lightest of all that. So, there are two different opinions.
This was considered the most severe.
Yeah. Huh? In general, Skila, Srefa, Herig, Vechenek, you know, some say that Skila is the worst, and some say that Chenek is the worst. So it all depends, you know, there's a difference of opinion.
Hanging or what, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't hanging, actually. Skila is being stoned, okay?
They throw them down
from a high place, right? And they drop stones on them, okay?
And they hang them later on.
Yeah, afterwards, correct. I mean, the person who was executed is supposed to be hanged, right? And then taken down after being hanged, has to be taken down and buried.
Yeah.
Because all this has to be done within the same day. You're not allowed to let the body... of a person, of an executed person, you know, remain overnight. Okay? It has to be buried the same day. Alright, anyway, getting back over here. Okay? Alright, so Yehuda says, Rashi Shahid wa Maaseh Tamar. We know that. I mean, that he confessed, you know, that he was wrong when it came to this business with Tamar. V'chein hoya masoris b'yadehem, right? And likewise, he says, there was a tradition among God's sages, Midrash Agada, the Rabbi Tanchuma, and also in the Midrash the Rabbi Tanchuma, you know, there are various Midrashim. Mm-hmm. This is one of the more famous ones, the Midrash of Rabbi Tanchuma. Kishoma Yehuda, Tzotkum, in many, that when Yehuda said, she is more righteous than I am, in other words, she is right, I'm wrong, so, Omad Reuven. So, Reuven stood up, the Yomar, and he said, and you know what? Bilbalti Yitzui Ovi. Right, I was the one who literally disarranged the bed of my father. The Achshav, so now Yechi Reuven, so let Reuven also live. In what way? Shildo Kayemes Gilhu Chai, his skeleton was whole as if he were alive. The zos for Yehuda, but when it came to Yehuda, Shehu Biskalgil, he was, as we said before, his bones were rattling around because of the, literally, you know, like the curse that he brought upon himself, you know, when he took Binyamin, and, you know, the father was not very happy about the whole deal, if you remember. Yaakov didn't want to send him, right? So, then what happened? So, when...
He was forced to bring Binyamin.
Huh?
He was forced to bring Binyamin.
Yeah.
He
all right, so...
He didn't want to bring it.
Yeah, right.
So, this was his punishment.
Yeah. So, at any rate, what happened to the bones of Yehuda? So, Moshe Rabbeinu prayed, you know, that things should go well with Yehuda, right? And so then what happened was that the bones all came back, right, in the shofar. What is the shofar? In other words, to their original sockets. Instead of being, you know, broken up.
Rearranged.
They were rearranged, right. The mokom shenitku misham. In other words, they came back to the place from which they had been removed. Kimo de shof betuchte. As we have a Gemara, a reference to an animal which could become treif by virtue of the fact that a limb is no longer in its proper place. Okay?
Couldn't have had more weight with the decision to sell Joseph. I mean, he was the older brother. He could have used his weight more, no?
Yes. But his roommate, who was the oldest brother. Reuben was the oldest brother. Reuben is the one who originally over there, you know, they speak about the fact, you know, that Reuben says, you know, Reuben came back to the pit, you know, which he had thrown Joseph in, and he saw it, and he said, Ayela de Nedo, right?
He's gone.
What's going to happen, and so on and so forth. So, you know, they said that, you know, Reuben, you know, he had merit by virtue of the fact that he tried to save Yosef, but why didn't he try to use a little bit more persuasion in order to do it? That he didn't do, you see. Yeah. If only he had known, you know, what he could have been capable of doing, and he didn't do it, you see. In other words, he had the potential of saving him if he had only used his influence with his brothers more, but he didn't exercise it. Reuven.
But he was still jealous of Joseph.
Yeah, right. All right. But of course, I mean, what happened was that even though Reuven was the Bechor, right, but still, who eventually became the Melech? It was Yehuda. That was from Shevet Yehuda.
Right.
Of course, originally you had, you know, Shaul from Shevet Binyamin. But, you know, his dynasty didn't last. It was the dynasty of David HaMelech that lasted.
But in actuality, it was Besheret that the Jews, that Joseph would be sold into Egypt, and that he should be there to bring the Jews down to Egypt,
yes,
and so on. So
correct.
That was the Gutsaf, you know?
Right, of course.
Some way he would have wound up in Egypt.
Yeah, well, okay. This is what Yosef himself said to the brothers. Remember, they were afraid he was going to take vengeance on them, you know, after the father died. So he says, Elokim chashavot ha-teva. It was God who had planned this for our own good, so that, you know, we could save all these people, you know, from the family.
Right.
Yes.
Yehuda was related to the Saleh.
Yeah, but Saleh was from Shevet Yehuda, right. It was the Saleh ben Chor, and we say that Chor was the the son of Nachshon ben Aminadab and Miriam, right? Yeah, but Chor, if you remember, was murdered according to the tradition, according to the Medrash, right? Right, because he protested against Egel Hazor, so the people killed him.
That's why Aaron went ahead with it, because he figured they're ready to kill the prophets. So
correct. Right, I mean, this is what the Medrash says, exactly, yeah. So, but therefore, when the Rabbeinu Shalalem decided to forgive the people of Israel for the sin of the Egel HaZohar by giving them the Mishkan, so in that particular case, who was chosen to be the chief architect? Who was the one who was given?
Salah.
Right. Salah was the one who was, had Ruach Elokim, right? He had the Spirit of God with him.
But this one,
there's another architect there too. Besides, he mentions another architect.
Yeah,
Holy
Yov ben Achisamach.
He
came from the tribe of Dan. Yeah. All right, let's continue over here. Okay.
Yeah.
Rashi.
All right. Yes, I want to finish a little bit more with the Rashi right. over here. So then the Gemara says that, you know, okay, so Yehuda came upstairs to the Mesifta, up in heaven, right? The Mesifta. And what happened over there? Lisa Litanim Shur Hachamim, they put him among all the wise people, but he was unable to do what? He was unable to, first of all, to comprehend what he was doing. So Moshe Rabbeinu prayed, and as a result, he was able to understand, but he still wasn't able to speak out and everything else, you know, as we said, right? So, in other words, with every part of the bracha that that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to Shevet Yehuda, so he got a little bit more and more, okay? So, you know, Mishkol and Mitrach, which means Lisa Velita, in other words, it means, you know, to have discussion back and forth. And finally, it says Yodav Rav Lo. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu prayed that Yehelo Nitzachon L'Riv Rivo, let him be able to successfully plead his cause. B'hai Dichsiv, and this is what is written. In other words, Yodav. What is Yodav? It says it's the Lashon Milchama. In other words, when you argue, it's like a form of having to battle your way, you know, against you know, people who. Why wasn't he able? Because he wasn't worthy enough. He had a
guilty,
right?
Because
he needed a little bit more push.
What happened with Binyamin? Let's go back to Binyamin.
No, we're talking about Yehuda right now.
I know, but you said that the reason he was
Yehuda's sin to begin with was the fact that he had promised Yaakov Avinu and he caused him great tsar.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
for this,
Binyamin, that's what you
right,
said.
And we said. Forget about Binyamin. Binyamin learned from Yehuda the fact that what? That you have to confess your sin. This, this is what
he
learned.
What was the big sin? Because he slept Binyamin back to Yosef? What was his big sin?
No. The sin was that his father didn't want to send Binyamin. And he insisted. And so he said, I take upon myself the fact that
he cursed himself.
Right, he cursed himself.
Oh, he did?
Yes, this is what we learned from the Rashi. This is what we just read in the Rashi a few minutes ago.
Shot.
Right. Right. It says, you know, V'chotasi l'cho kol hayomim, he says, I will be a sinner to you all the days. Now, what does it mean, all the days? Not just the days of my life, but also even in Olam Haba. This is what we said in the Rashi over there. Right. So now, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu prays on his behalf that not only he should be given Olam Haba, but even a chance to go before the Mesifta up in heaven, you know, the yeshiva up there, and be able, you know, to carry on the discussion with us and plead his cause over there. Okay. So, what is the milchama? It says, "Hu milchamto shel Torah." This is a very, you know, this expression is a very well-known expression, milchamto shel Torah, literally the battle of Torah. In other words, that when you have arguments back and forth, it's almost like a Jewish war between the various partners. But, you know, this is good. This is not
a physical war.
Bad, right. It's not a physical war, but it's a war of, you know, one mind against
one
another.
One idea against another.
Right. Exactly. So then he says, you know, Aliba de Hilchaso Lohiyazeich and Loma Advar Hamiskabil. He tried to put down an argument that would be accepted by them, but they wouldn't accept it. Okay? All right. Now, finally, the last thing that we had over there, yes, we had, first of all, Man de Mafit Chatoi. You see that? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. If you remember, the question is over there. It's the last statement that we had that we did last week. Okay, let's review what it says over there. It says over there, first of all, Ela Reuven, right, in the Gemara, five lines up. Okay,
right.
Six lines up. Okay, Ela Reuven Loman Lida Eide. Tell me, why did you? Why did Reuven confess? Right. What do you mean? Why did he confess? So. The reason is because we have a statement, Omar Rav Sheshes, that Rav Sheshes said that Chotzef Olai, some say by Israel or not, that's not the important, but Chotzef Olai de Mafit Chatoi, right? That I don't like, he says,
or it looks like a chutzpahnik to me, a person who has chutzpah, who confesses his sins publicly. Why? So, as Rashi says over here, man de mafit chatoy, right? The rabbi in public. In other words, if he's telling everybody, hey, I'm a sinner and I did this and this, it seems that he's not even ashamed of what he did because he's making a public announcement about it. So, you see, Rav Sheshes didn't like that idea. So the question is then, why did Reuven confess before other people? We said that before, you know, when he heard Yehuda confess, so he decided to confess too, right? So the answer is in order that the chashad, in other words, that suspicion shouldn't fall on his other brothers. In other words, he took the responsibility upon himself, so that the father should not, you know, feel, as Rashi says over here, the lev shadu achus shelo yehu shor echov nechshodim me'avim, so that his other brothers should not be suspected by their father. That okay. All right, so now let's continue with the new Gemara. All right. Mishnah says, what happens if the woman says, you know, yes, I have sinned? So in that case, what did we learn? The Mishnah, so the Mishnah over there says, you know, that chauvinist ksubasa, right? Which means literally they break her ksuba. So what does it mean they break her ksuba? So he says, shmat mino, from this we learn that what? That shovrin is kosvin shovar. In other words, they write like a receipt for the fact, you know, that she has confessed, and therefore, you know, she's not entitled to the ksuba. Rashi, shma mino kosvin shovar, right? Uflukta, he says, the Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi. This is a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi in Bava Basra. He says, the Kama, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Ein koisvin shovar el yikruas hashtar." According to him, they don't bother to write a receipt, but instead they take her ksuba, right, and they tear it up. The im kain tzarach zeh lishmor shovro min ha'achborim, because if they will write a shtar for the husband, it means that he has to preserve it in a place where he'll keep it, safe from having mice come and eat it up. Obviously, if mice come and eat up the receipt, you know, that she gave, you know, saying that I confessed and therefore I'm not entitled to my ksuba, so what happens if it's destroyed? And in that particular case, she could come and claim again, you see. Okay. So that's his opinion, okay? Well, that would make sense, right?
Those days they didn't make copies. They didn't have Xerox.
But they didn't have, right, they didn't have a Xerox.
They didn't have Xerox.
It would be nice if they did, but they didn't necessarily. Right. Right. Yeah.
Carbon paper didn't have.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, one opinion then is that they write her a shofar, right? They write her a receipt. But Omar Abaye, Tani Mikaraz, says no. Don't understand it that they write a receipt, but say rather they tear up. What do they tear up? So, as we said, they tear up shtar kesubosa, as Rashi says. They tear up the ksuba that she has,
yeah,
that they tear up. So she can come and say, look, here is my ksuba, pay me my money.
Right.
Okay. Omale Rova, so Rova said, Vaho shoveris katoni. He says, look, doesn't it say shoveris? Which, of course, would make us inclined to feel that it's the shover that they write a receipt, right? Because, you know, the play on words, you understand the closeness of the words of shovar, meaning a receipt, to the word shoveris, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, El Amar Rava, so Rava says, but what bimekom shen koisvin ksuba askin. We're talking about a place where they did not actually write a formal ksuba. It's Gemara in Baba Basra and a couple of other places. Well, we'll take a look at the Rashi, okay? It says, there were places where they did not write an actual ksuba for the...
Where are you in Rashi?
So the third line from the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah. Elasom kemalfdai bezdin, but rather, people in those communities would rely upon the fact that they know that it is a condition of the bezdin that when a man marries, right, so shetikdu de psula masayim, right, that if she is a virgin, then the husband has to promise her 200 zuz, right, in case he either dies or divorces her. Well, almona, mona. And if she is a widow, then it's 100 zuz. Mona is 100 zuz, okay? Ushemagarsha, and if he divorces her, motzia gito, then, you know, normally what does she do? She takes out her get, right? The govabo. Over here, by the way, gito over here doesn't mean get. Gito also means simply document. Okay? So in other words, she produces the document, right? And she collects. In other words, she has a document saying that he married her. But it's not a formal kind of kusuba, but we have. So salmino, and if she becomes widowed, so mavia ede misa. Then in that case, even if there's no formal document, but as long as she can produce witnesses who testify to the fact that they saw this man, you know, that they saw her husband die, so the gova, the witnesses come to the bezdin and say, you know, we witnessed the death of her husband. Then in that case, she collects. What does she collect? So even without a shtar, she would still collect in a place like that, because people know that whether she's a whether when he married her, whether she was a virgin or not, but they know what the amount is in the ksuba, normally, okay? Hotza, kevin do yefsha. However, in this case where you can't do it, so Moda Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda would also agree, Shekosman Shoba. It says, he would also agree that in a place, even where they don't write an actual ksuba, but still she should have a formal document. Why? The Tovlo, because it's good for a person who is involved that he has a document to show that a debt was paid.
Written proof.
Right, written proof. Like, so that, for example, the woman who lost her husband, right, and she's collected without a shtar, so she could go and bring other witnesses and say, hey, yeah, my husband died, and collect again.
Right.
So in order to avoid this double dipping, so therefore, even Rav Yehuda, who says that there may be a place where they don't bother to write a ksuba, but nevertheless he would say, here, it's a good idea that there should be a shofar. There should be a document, a receipt, so to speak. So, the Vezin Acher, right, in a different Bezin, she would go to a different Bezin, not the first one, but obviously to a different one, and say, hey, I have witnesses, right? The Tisba Enna, and she would make a claim on the estate. Okay. All right. The Yimum Rata Horani, last line over there, and if the woman says, I am innocent, right, then what happens? So the Mishnah says, Mala Nesu Nashari Misra. They bring her into the eastern gate of the Beis HaMikdash, right? So they bring her in. Malan, of course, means literally they bring her up. Because don't forget, the Beis HaMikdash is on the Har HaBayis. It's on a hill, okay, and it's higher. Incidentally, if you've ever been to Yerushalayim, if you approach the Har HaBayis from what we call Har Tzion, so it doesn't look that much different, you know. So this it doesn't look like it's that much bigger, you see. But if you go out, you know, through the gate that leads to the coast of the Bar Rovi, they call it the Shar HaAshpa. Take a look and you'll see that there's a very steep decline going down to the Nachal Kidron, to the Brook of Kidron, okay? Very steep decline. Today, it's mostly occupied by an Arab village. There were a few Jewish people who tried to live over there, but, you know, the Arabs overwhelmed them, unfortunately. But this was the original place of Yerushalayim, so that it makes sense, we can understand that if they lived down there and they looked up a steep hill, it's no wonder, you know, that the Beis HaMikdash, which stood on Har Tzion, you know, would be elevated, and it would be, you know, magnificent in its height and so on. And this, you know, the description that we have in various places in the Bible, you know, the describing Har Tzion, right? So So
the lowest spot around.
Huh?
It's probably the lowest spot near the outside wall.
You mean if you go all the way down? Yes, yes. Actually, there is a valley all around over there that surrounds the,
the
ancient city.
That was
that's also a valley, right? Gabe and Hinnom. Yeah, yeah. That's in a somewhat different direction, but the whole slew of valleys that going around over there. Well, it was called Gabe and Hinnom, the Valley of the Son of Hinnom. But why did it get its reputation? Because there was a time when people used to sacrifice their children to Moloch. They adopted this Moabite custom, of serving Moloch. Right, so that's how the term arose. Yes. All right. Anyway, Gemara says, Ma'alin Oysa. What do you mean they bring her up? Hasam Kaima, she's already there. After all, it said, what? Said. As Rashi says, she's already there, Balishkas Hagozis. Remember, what did it say to? It said, the Besdin, her local Besdin, right, they hear the complaints of her husband and everything else, right, and she insists that she wants to be tested. Correct? So then what do they do? So they send two Tamini Chachabim, we said. And where do they escort them to? They escort them to the Beis HaMikdosh. And there she has to be judged by whom? By a Besdin Shoshim Viechad, right? By the Besdin Hagodol.
Right.
By the Supreme Court sitting in the Lishkas Hagosis. Okay? That's where they bring her. So, if she's already there, so what do you mean? They're going to bring her up to the Har HaBayis? She's there. So the Gemara says, the Matzkinin law, the Machtinin law. You know what they do? They take her up, they take her down, they bring her up, they take her down. Why? Kedej Liago, they want to tire her out. The Tanya, as we have learned, and this is a Gemara concerning also the witnesses of the capital case in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where it's written, Rabbi Shimon ben Alozo Omer says, Besdin Masiyanes Oedim Mimokim Mimokim, that the Besdin take the witnesses, they make them travel from one place to another, Kedej Titor Datan Alehen Yasu Behen, in order that they could become confused and then they will retract their testimony. That's how much they're trying to look out for the benefit of the person who has been accused, so that if the these witnesses come, they try to tire them out so that they after a while they wouldn't remember this detail or that detail. Rashi? Okay.
Yes.
Hasam Kaima, she's already there, right? But Lishka Sagotis. Kidakamrit, as we've already said, what? Sheyayimu Oleo Bezin Agodol, right? That the Supreme Court, they have to give her words of warning, right? As we said before. The Lishka Sagotis Bazorahoy, so Chetzio Bekodesh Chetzio Bechol. Now, the Lishka Sagotis, literally the chamber of hewn stones. This was half in the sanctified area and half in the unsanctified area. Kidoma biyoma perikshani, as the Gemara says, that Yuma deals with the order of Yom Kippur, and also there's a lot of material there about the Beis HaMikdash, because after all, the major service in the days of the Beis HaMikdash was what the Kohen Gadol had to go through. And so therefore there's a great deal of space is placed over there in the Gemara to describe the Beis HaMikdosh and the Kohen Gadol and what took place and so on. Okay, so the Lishkas Hagozis was half in the sanctified area and half in an unsanctified area. Okay, and then so they take her up, right? Malinos and Nesimachtinlo, and they take her down. It says Mikol Har HaBayis, they take her down from the Har HaBayis. In other words, they make her go up. First they made her go up the hill, right? Now they make her go down the hill, and then they bring her up again, right? Kedei liyagua, in order to weary her, literally, the sidak minamayim, so that she should be, worried about what will be the effect if she drinks the waters, right? The soda, and she will confess kishatira b'tzarosa, when she sees all kinds of tzaros, that she has. And this is similar to what they did in the case of the Yedim, Masin Hoyu Eso Yedim, right? Shemeidim Edus Nefoshes, who have to give testimony which could result in capital punishment. Okay? Ushebot Kinoison, when they would question the witnesses, so Hoyamasian Osam Epino Lepino Melishkalish, they would take him out from one corner to another, from one office to another, and so on and so forth, so that, you know, they might retract their testimony. Naturally, if they are 100% sure of their testimony, it's one thing. But if, let's say, they're not 100% sure, if there's a doubt, whatever, so in that case, you know, they should retract their testimony so that there should not be any capital punishment. All right. Then it says that they would take, you know, the Shari Mizrach, right, and stand by the Shari Nikanor, Shesham Ashkenaz HaSotos, because there is where they gave the Sotos the water to drink, right? So it says, Bishlamar Sotos. Okay, as far as the Sotos, there's a good reason why this is where they took them, namely in the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because Dechsev, the Pasuk says, Behem Mira Kohenes HaIshal Tzei HaDeshem. The Kohen is to cause the woman to stand before God. And actually, what is before God means in the Beis HaMikdash. Mitzorayim Nami. Also, people who had gone through a period of leprosy and now were seeking to, end this period of the leprosy. So, right? So, Dechsev, it's written over there, they had Mira Kohen HaMitaher, right? It's written over there that the Kohen, who is to perform the ceremony of cleansing them from their leprosy, right, is to cause as a Ish HaMitaher, the person who is about to be cleansed from his leprosy, Lifnei Hashem, also the same thing, before God. So, Ela Yol El Yoledes, but how do we know that the woman who has given birth, that she should also be over there? My Tama, what's the reason? He says, if you say it is because this way they can come and stand next to their korban. Remember, they had to bring korbanos at the time. It was like, you know, a moment of thanksgiving to God, but they had to bring korbanos. Echad liyelo, echad lachatos, and so on and so forth, okay?
The place of a huge stones near the altar.
Pardon me?
The place of a hewn stones near the altar.
No, it's in one of the side chambers. Okay. So the Tanya, as we learned, it says, "Ein korbanu shel odom korav elim kein omid al gabav." We say that if a person brings a korban, he has to stand near it. What do I mean? Have to stand near it? You have to be, you know, nearby in order to show, you know, that this is your korban. As a matter of fact, in some cases, it's written v'somach yodei al rosh. In other words, he has to literally lean his hands down on the head of the animal that he's bringing as a korban. Okay? So, Ihochi, if this is the case, Zovin the Zovis Nami, why doesn't the Mishnah say, you know, that people who are coming to the Beis HaMikdash in order to be cured of, you know, it's like a gonorrheal infection, okay? They see, you know, that they have issue coming forth from the genitals. And, you know, there's no reason, you know, why it should be. Like in the case of a woman, it's not in the time when she normally would have a menstrual period. In the case of a man, you know, there's, you know, he has discharges from his flesh, which is not, you know, the same as a seminal discharge. So, in other words, it's more like he got a real affection. So, when they become cured, they have to count 7 days, and so then they come. And also bring a sacrifice for purity, right? So how come,
huh?
A zov, right? So how come the Mishnah didn't mention them and only mentioned the first three? So he says, Ihochidami, yeah, you're right. They should have also been included. But the Tano Chadaminayu Nokat. But you know, the person who is the author of the Mishnah that we had, so he left out one. So it didn't count every single person. It's very windy outside. Yeah, several times I thought. Ah, okay. Would you please, you know, make sure that's closed? Yeah. We wouldn't want the door. We once lost a window over there.
There we go.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Right.
All
right. Yeah. Rashi. Okay, Lifnei Hashem, right? says in the presence of God. So he says, Hu ha-Pesach, this is the gate, Shebo derech Knisa, Biyitzir l'chol boi azor. This is the way, you know, people enter and leave the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Then it says, you know, that they have to stand near their korban, right? Kishemakrim es korban kineyem. In the case of women who are there, you know, who are recovering from childbirth, they have to bring kinim. Kinim means two birds that they have to bring, okay? Literally means this, but this is what it means. L'taharom, so that they should be cleansed. Be cleansed what? Be cleansed actually mim kod novecha. In other words, from the... you know, the fact that they had an issue coming out of their womb.
Do they have to touch the bird or just the...
No, they give it to the Kohen.
The Kohen Shaftin.
Yeah, right. Kohen takes care of it, okay? But they have to bring it to him, right. Yeah. And Bachilas Kochim, right. And this is a general rule, he says, when you bring sacrifices, you know, that you yourself are going to be eating, okay? That's what we call kachim, kachim kalim, and so on, okay? But then, but even, you know, or could also be, you know, even let's say if you bring an oshum, you know, which the kohen is going to eat, or a chatos, but still, you present it, so you should be nearby at the time, see, so that, you know that it is being done with you in mind.
The women are not allowed to come into the...
Not into the main Azor, but there was the Eswas Doshim. But the priest could take it from them at the entrance of the Sharni Kanar, okay? Which was, you know, half in the women's court and half in the Eswas Yisrael.
As close as they can.
Yeah. Okay. So, yes. Mitzvah lo'odom, he says, it's a mitzvah for a person, Sheyamod v'yishmal korbono, right? The person should stand and, you know, guard his korban to make sure that it's not going to get mixed up with any others and so on and so forth. The nafkalom is sifri, and the sifri, which is the medrash upon Vayikra, they gather, that is, they derive over there, it's written, Tishmeru l'hakrav li b'mado. Remember we say, you know, in the morning, you know, Tzavos b'Yisrael, it's all about the daily sacrifice. And it's written over there, Tishmeru, you shall observe it, l'hakrav li, you know, to sacrifice unto me. So Tishmeru means that you have to be like Shomrim, you have to be on watch to make sure that, you know, nothing's going to happen to the animal that you are dedicating, okay?
39-5057.
And if a person is permitted to go into the Azora, you know, into the main courtyard, so in that case, nichnas. The yelu shalohoyocholos, and those who were not able to go into the Azora, into the main, you know, into the courtyard itself, mivnei shahoyo b'chusmas kapora, because, as I explained to you last week, the b'chusa kapora means that they still have not fulfilled the amount of time necessary as the Torah prescribes. Let's say in the case of a mitzvah, they're commanded to come on the seventh day. But when do they become actually cleansed? By Yom HaShmini, on the eighth day, okay? Or as I pointed out, you know, the first Mishnah that we have in Brachas about, you know, Kohanim. Shoshah Kohanim, Chlusinachol B'Trumoson, if you remember the wording over there. In other words, when do we begin, when is the earliest time to daven Maariv? At the time when the Kohanim can go and eat Truma. So whose Kohanim are we talking about? We're talking about Kohanim who had become unclean. They had already gone to the mikveh,
right.
But they still couldn't eat any truma. They couldn't eat any hallowed food until the evening, until the sun had set. Right. So that, you know, was a sign that that's the earliest time you can daven Maariv. Okay. Yeah. So the elu shelo yecholos mipnei shehoyeh mechusus kapora. These who were not allowed to come in because they still didn't have that time element, including, for example, you know, the women who were there. So omdos bechalal shar nikana. Then they would stand in the space of the gate of nikana, shalonis kadesh, because that had not been sanctified. In other words, they could still go as far as over there, even though it led into the main azora. You understand? But still, they couldn't go in. You know, if they stood over there, it was close enough.
But they could see the animal being taken. The kind
yes.
Of right.
Yes. So then it says, Zovim is Zovis Lame, right? And people who are suffering from this gonorrhea, men and women, right? Shkem Makriv and Korbanehen. So they're also in the Chusvei Kapora. They're not allowed to go in as yet because they still lack the final time, you know, for Kapora. The Einan Yechol Nikonin, so they cannot come in. Okay. Well, I think that we'll stop at this particular point tonight. Okay. So we'll start from Tanur Rabbanan over here on page Pes, Omer Aleph. Okay.
On the bottom? Yeah, right.
We'll start to here next week, Am Yetzer Hashem.
Top, bottom?
I'll tell you where we are. We are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We're on the 12th line from the top.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah. Right.
A Mashkish Tetos,
yeah? Yeah, right. We're at the Tanur Rabbanan over there.
No, okay.
Yeah. So we have them record right now?
Yeah.
I've got to raise the volume a little. It didn't seem loud enough.
Okay. Alright.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Alright. Tanur Rabbanan. You have the following teaching. We do not have two women who are accused of infidelity given the maim ha'morim at the same time. Why? The Tanakhama right now, that is the one who the anonymous person who makes this particular statement, gives the following reason. He says that the reason is that if one of them refuses to, refuses to drink, or let's put it the other way around. You have two women over there, okay? If you have two women simultaneously, the problem is that one who actually did commit adultery will see the one who didn't commit adultery. And seeing that the other one is not affected by the Mayim HaMa'orim, so she'll say, I'll take a chance too. I can get away with it, okay? This is the basic reason, according to him. Rashi, as you can see, Shano Yehei Libo Gas Pachaverta, okay? He says, Shema Ha'achas Omenes Albuya. In other words, one of the women insists that she is innocent. Good evening, good evening. How are you? Come on it. Come and join the party.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. So, because, you know, she maintains her innocence, but ain't no moda. So she refuses to confess that, you know, she committed adultery, okay? Lomar, by saying, Kameya Ani, right? She refuses to say that I am guilty. So the Chaverta and the other woman, if she's standing by over there, Shehita Mea, who really did commit adultery, Roa Zu Sheina Moda, and she sees the one who would not say, you know, would not confess that she committed adultery. Ms. Hovela says Boshto, and the result will be, she controls, literally, she tolerates the fact that she's being put to shame, because remember the whole business of this procedure that we're learning about, the Kohen taking the woman and ripping off this and exposing that and so on and so forth, the basic reason is in order to make the woman feel disgraced, okay? So this woman who says, I am innocent, and she knows that she's innocent, so she is not going to pay any attention to the fact that she's suffering disgrace at this particular moment, because she's determined, prove, that she is innocent by drinking the Mayim HaMa'orim. So the result will be the Libam is Gabir Aleha. So the other woman, who sees this, so she'll get, courage, so to speak, Lasos Kimozu, to do just as the other woman did. The Yena Moda, and she also refused, to confess the fact that she committed adultery. So according to the Tanakhama, this is the basic reason why you do not be mashkin shtei sotos keachas, in other words, to have two sotos, you know, administer the mayim hamorim to them at the same time, because one of them will simply see, you know, that if the other one got away with it, so to speak, so she also got away with it. This is her reason.
Well, it could make the other way around too.
Yeah, right.
Depending who's on first.
Correct. But this is the reason that he gets. All right. Now, Rabbi Yehuda has a different reason. He says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says, Lo min Hashem hu. He says, no, this is not the reason why you are not mashkin shtei sotos keyachas. Elo, but rather, it's because on our Korah we have a pasuk. What does the pasuk say? Pasuk says, "Vishbia usa kohen." The kohen makes her take an oath. Okay, but as you know, he tells you, you know, if you didn't do this and that and so on, right? But if you did, you know, then you'll be cursed and so on and so forth. And it says, "Usa," her. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that means levado. Only she, in other words, one alone, and not two at the same time. V'tana kama, so now the Gemara asks, and how about, you know, the author of the statement who said, you know, the business, you know, shelo yehei libo gas b'chaverto, how about him? Hok sivoso, doesn't he also accept the fact that the Torah says osa, which would mean, of course, she alone, and not another one at the same time? So he says, Tana kama. Who is this Tana Kama? He says the Tana Kama in this case, in other words, the first, you know, the author of the first statement is Rab Shimon. This is Rab Shimon, the Dorish Tan Dikra, who likes to find a logical reason for the pasuk saying whatever it says. Okay. So, well, yeah, we'll come back to that in a second. Ma Tan Ka Omar, and what is it? He's explaining what is the reason why the pasuk says what it says. Ma tam osa levado. Why does the pasuk say? Well, we'll come back. Yeah. Why does the pasuk say osa, meaning she alone? Says kadei shelo yehei libo gas b'chaverta. Right. In order that, as he said, you know, a few moments ago, he's repeating. He says in order that the second woman should not, you know, decide that she can get away with it by watching the first woman who took the oath, had the mayim hamorim, and, you know, nothing happened to her, because the other woman, of course, was innocent. Okay? So, he's really giving a tam, in other words, he's giving a reason why the Torah says what the Torah says. Okay? Aha, good evening, good evening. How do you do?
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Mike, you want to put on more light over there, please? And we can bring up a few more chairs. No, we need more light. Apparently the bulb is not good. Okay, we're on the Daf Ches Amud Aleph right now, okay? All right, Rashi. Okay, Rashi says first of all, Lo min Hashem hu. In other words, he's saying, you know, what Rabbi Yehuda said, meaning that this is not the reason, you know, why we say that ein mashkin shtei sotos at the same time. He says, Lo zehu hatam shemata, ve'ikar haneamar b'davar. The important thing that we find over here is what is the word osa. And what is the pasuk? The pasuk is Vishmiya Osa HaKohen, which, as we said, according to Rav Yehuda, Osa means she alone and not two women at the same time. Now, then we said that Rav Shimon, who is identified as the Tana Kama in this particular case, he likes to give logical reasons why we have the pasuk say what it says. This is Rav Shimon Yahiv Tavei Lekrai. Right. In other words, he gives reasons why we have psukim. The Baba Metzia, example he gives of Baba Metzia over here, the Ko Amar, Torah says, Lo sachbol beged almono, right? Torah says that you shall not take as a pledge the garment of a widow. In other words, let's say the widow owes money, right? So the creditor cannot come and seize her garment as a pledge for the fact that she's going to pay up her debt. Okay? So according to Rab Shimon, he gives the following interpretation. He says, this pasuk applies only to a poor woman, but not to a wealthy woman. Why? The Tam HaMikro, because the Torah text has a reason for what it says. Namely, Sheim HaTom HaMashkino, Yatachayv LaHachsiyodo, that if you take it as a pledge and you have to give it back to her, right? Yato Nichna Shachvis Liklo V'Yavis LaHachsiyodo, and in the morning you come and say, give me your garment, and then at night you come and you have to bring it back again. So, Masir Shem Rab Ishchidasela. Then in that particular case, you're going to give her a bad name among her neighbors. Another the women will say,
what's he doing?
This is this guy, right? He's coming every morning and every night to the house over there. And her reputation will be ruined. So, he gives a Tav Lamikra in this particular case, okay?
So, this is my Mashkan?
The Mashkan, yeah. The Mashkan, no. You. In other words, take it as a pledge for a loan.
Mashkin.
Yeah. Mashkin. Yeah. Mashkin is good. The noun is mashkin. Okay?
Okay.
All right. The verb is lamashkin. Okay? In other words, it's a PL verb, you know, made up of four letters in it. Okay? And you can see, you know, it's based upon the noun mashkin itself. You have quite a few PL verbs that were made up from nouns. I don't know if they still use it. But once upon a time, they made up a verb in modern Israel, la'amrek. Have you heard that verb?
Amrek?
La'amrek. It means to Americanize something. So, you know, words are being created all the time.
Okay.
Today, they would simply write Americanizatia, you know. Okay. So now, okay, since both of them say that what does the word osa mean in the case of the sota, it means levado, only she alone, and you don't have, you know, you don't administer the mayim hamorim to two women simultaneously. So in that particular case, the question is, mai benayhu. So what is the difference that they both accept it? So the answer is ikka benayhu rotsesis. Says there is a difference of opinion among them in the case of a woman who is trembling. What do we mean by a woman who is trembling? So he says, "My ben Ayud the Rashi, right? My ben Rabbi Yehuda the Rabbi Shimon, right? Imishum libo gatsbo, imishum zeretam."